Hey guys, thanks for tuning into the show. Before we begin, I'd like to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Tego. Tego is premium gear for the modern everyday athlete. They create products using emerging materials and textiles technology that feel good when you are at your sweatiest best. So whether it's a grueling workout or a long-ass flight, check out Tego. You can find out more at www.tego.fit/tpow. That's tego.fit/tpow. Thanks for listening, guys. Hey guys, welcome to The Pursuit of Wellness, a show about the journey of wellness. My name is Kabir Uppal and I'll be your host throughout this journey. I've been a fitness enthusiast for many years now. I see being fit and becoming a healthy individual as an ongoing process. I don't work in the wellness space. I treat this as a journey for myself as well. A few years ago, I co-founded FitNut, a wellness platform where people could find exciting and informative content on fitness, nutrition, and healthy living. By chatting with experts and other enthusiasts in the space, I hope to learn a lot myself, and hopefully you guys will too. On this podcast, I will chat with experts and enthusiasts to learn the dimensions of wellness that will help you achieve the holistic health you set your mind to. If you're listening to this, you're either thinking about or have started your wellness journey already. Or maybe you're just curious about how to get fitter, healthier, whether it's physically or mentally. Welcome. Come be a part of this community we are trying to build. You can check out our Facebook group, The Pursuit of Wellness, where we interact with guests and listeners and discuss their journeys. We also discuss each episode and share stories that can help you redefine your life and achieve your fitness goals. You can also find us on Twitter at TPOW Podcast. You can also find this in the show notes. This is a Mancha Media production. In this episode, we'll be talking to fitness entrepreneur Arun Chahal. He's a movement training specialist and a TRX senior course instructor. He's also the owner of Chefingo, which is a health food company based out of Gurgaon, which creates meals based on your goals. He's also the co-founder at MoveFit, a fitness education conference. I've known Arun for a while now and learned a lot from him over the years. Hopefully you will too. In this episode, we talk about short-term versus long-term goals, how to find the best help, and how to choose the best gym, studio, trainer, or nutrition service for you. Before we jump into the episode, I'd like to take a moment to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Sproutbox, a premier co-working space in New Delhi. With no lock-ins and month-to-month flexibility, you can choose between shared desks and private workspaces designed to help you build your next big thing. We're actually recording out of our studio here in Sproutbox's Okhla location. Check out our show notes for more details on our sponsor. Let's move on to the episode, guys. Hey Arun, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much, man.
How's it going?
Great. I'm really pumped to be at the show. And finally, we have made it to a point where we sit together and we're doing this.
And actually record. Yeah. I'm glad we could make that happen. So jumping straight into it, man, we're talking about the journey of wellness here today. And, you know, I just want to get your thoughts, starting thoughts on, you know, what does the wellness journey mean to you? You know, how have you approached it? And what are your, you know, holistic thoughts on what the journey should be?
Well, first of all, I want to share my journey first so that people get a little idea of how I started off. My education background is from physiotherapy. And ever since I got graduated, I started working at a hospital. And working at a hospital could be really stressful for professional because we guys are sort of treating patients daily in and out, and there are chances of getting infections, and you're always pretty vulnerable. And as an assistant, I was working like 12 hours a day, 16 hours a day, being on my feet and just working. And at one point, I felt that it was not sort of satisfying enough for me. So that was the point when I was actually looking at some gyms around my area where I could go and work out and straight away go to work. And that was the time when I found one gym and I went to that place and I looked at that place. That place looked amazing. It was one of the Gold's gym very close to my house. And I went to that place. I wanted to join it. And the head trainer out there asked me a question saying, "What do you do?" I said, "I'm a physical therapist." He's like, "We have got a spot available for physiotherapists to work at if you would like to join." And without even second thoughts, I said, "I want to join this place and I'll try and, you know, sort of switch from physio to fitness and see how does that go for me." So that was it. I joined a gym. I worked there for about 6-7 months. I try and extract every bit of juice that I could out of that place. And then that was start of my journey as a fitness professional. Now, from how I look it, from a perspective that I became fitter as I started working as a fitness professional was that I had always access of a gym, which is unlike people who work at corporates and they don't have access to gym. So for me, busting that stress out wasn't that difficult because I had access to gym. I could work anytime I could want to. So that was it. And then I started incorporating different types of training. So I started off with weightlifting and training, which is pretty conventional. Everybody starts off like that. Then I, you know, started developing an interest about functional training. Then I started developing interest about how can I incorporate my rehab stuff into fitness. And that's how the entire journey sort of shaped for me. So this was a little gist of how I came into fitness and now how the journey actually, you know, an individual approaching a journey or individual, how should they look at their journey is should be very holistic, should be not just thinking that they are going to a gym, they're just going to be working out for 1 hour. And here's the difference between workout and training. A workout is, you know, you just go to a gym, you sweat it out for 1 hour and that's it.
Yeah.
Training has got a purpose to it.
Yeah.
So once an individual finds out what the purpose for them is when they can actually make a meaning out of the journey.
So would you say that, you know, for you, because you joined Gold's Gym and you spent a significant amount of time being surrounded by, you know, all the workout methods that you were able to experiment with, all the other professionals that were around you, would you say that it gave you a more holistic view and actually built this idea of, say, training versus a workout for you?
Right, it does. So here's what. So any fitness professional who comes into, you know, a fitness industry, they have got their own mindset. They have got their own philosophy of training. Like I see a lot of trainers who background are bodybuilding, right? Some of the trainers, they come from yoga background. Some of the trainers, they come from group exercise background. So I was at a point where I was not really sure which side
you wanted to go.
Was at.
Yeah.
And that's when I started exploring more. And the more I explored, the more methods of training I figured out. That was the time when I knew about everything, but I knew exactly what I was pursuing at that time, which was functional training.
Cool. So to kind of jump into, you know, the first kind of question and topic we want to jump into, does everyone need to exercise? And I want to kind of explain that question in the sense, is it possible, say, for somebody who wants to, you know, live a healthier lifestyle to just, you know, manage their diet well, you know, keep up with information that is available, you know, be careful of certain bad fats, you know, make sure that there's a certain amount of carbs, fiber, protein in your diet. Can people actually get away with living a healthy lifestyle by just managing their diet and, say, the basic activity that they would get as a working professional?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it makes a lot of sense for, especially for people in today's, you know, age that they don't have time. Right, their nutrition is, you know, it's all here. Why they don't have the right kind of nutrition that they're having? So it brings us to a point where you have to make certain changes in your diet, which are sustainable. Like you said, you know, changing from a source of bad carb to a good carb. Right, that could be a good change for anybody. Yeah. So making these slight small changes could be, you know, helpful in the bigger or a longer run where people can sort of get healthier, fitter by not spending too much money, by not following yo-yo diets, by not doing GM diets for 1 week and then getting off them.
Yeah.
And just to pump in a little bit of physical activity, it could be running.
Yeah.
It could be, you know, 20 minutes of walking or 10 minutes of running or probably doing 100 jumping jacks. Could be anything that anyone could manage.
Yeah.
And this brings me to a point where I've had so many, you know, people ask me this question saying, what kind of cardio is good? Is running good? Is cross trainer good? Or is, you know, any other rowing good?
Yeah.
And my answer to them is the one that you can do is the best one.
Yeah, that's a good policy. If you can consistently do it, it's probably the one that works for you, right?
Right.
So that brings me to the next point that I wanted to kind of bring up with you. You know, you mentioned that you know, small tweak in your diet, a very important but small tweak in your diet can actually help give you that, you know, difference that you need to kind of live a healthier lifestyle. And I think the way that you, you know, answered the question was that it is important for everybody to exercise, right? There is a certain amount of exercise that needs to go into your regime to bring the pump. Now, that's also obviously, you know, in very goal-based, right? It depends on, are you trying to lose weight? Are you trying to train?
Right.
But that brings me to the question that how should, you know, a person that, say, is, you know, just starting off, or say, you know, is somebody who's spent a certain amount of time doing a particular workout but is not seeing the results. For both of those scenarios, you know, what do you think is the best way to hone in? I know you said that, you know, the one that you can do, but is there some kind of scientific way that people should look at, you know, which is the best one they should start off with?
Right. So there are different schools of thought for how people should approach certain kinds of trainings. And so we divide trainings into strength training and cardiovascular training and, you know, functional training and so on. And there are different ways of, you know, sort of dividing it into. But the best way, what I find, is to A, know the goal of a person, right? What do they want to achieve? Are they looking at... and it all boils down to a point where the goals have to be set in a very smart way. And when I say smart, they have to be specific, measurable, yep. They should be attainable,
achievable,
and realistic and time-bound. Yeah, so once the goals have been broken into that manner, it's then, you know, it could be a professional probably helping you out, or yourself, if you could figure out where would you want to fit and how would you want to fit your training in. Like, for example, knowing the kind of reps, it completely depends on what a person wants to achieve when they're training, right? So it's like a very open-ended question, but it's just that first things first is to know the goal. If somebody's stuck at a point, for example, if somebody's, you know, stuck at a weight, he wants to lose weight, he's been working out for almost 3 months and he's stuck at a weight and not losing any more weight, then probably a good thing for him would be to go back and set his goals again. Look at his daily, you look at his lifestyle. It's not just 1 hour of working out, but it's also on, you know, the other 23 hours of the day, what he's doing. So go back, look at that, make a journal, and then get back at working out again. So probably workout is fine, but he might be having 2 extra cookies with the tea in the evening.
Yeah.
So these kind of things sort of make a difference when it comes to changing and choosing what to do and how to do.
So documenting and actually analyzing what you've done and then kind of working towards the next step.
Right. It sounds a little tough to sort of document, and, you know, people don't actually realize that in 23 hours, they've done so much
different stuff,
and they're expecting things to change, worlds to change in that 1 hour. So it's, again, it brings us to the same point. It's very holistic. It's like a 360 degree thing that you have to sort of follow.
Yeah, and I think it's become much easier now with, you know, so many apps that allow you to kind of calculate, you know, actually feed in what kind of foods you're eating throughout the day, how much sleep you're getting, what kind of workouts you're doing. You know, I still see a lot of people at the gym that I work out at actually have like a tiny notebook and a pencil in their back pocket that they pull out. So I completely see your point about why that documentation part is so important to the journey as such.
Yeah, it all comes to the point that having so many apps and giving, you know, putting in so much information is great, but then the information has to be meaningful. It has to be meaningful to an individual who is putting the information in.
Yeah.
I mean, knowing that you sleep for 6 hours a day, 5 times a week, is not meaningful if you don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, what the action points are right after that.
So that's where I think also the information has to be very, very precise in terms of when people are looking for information on internet or any kind of platform they're looking for, seeking information.
Yeah.
That's what they probably should be looking at. That the data that I've collected, how can I use that to be better at whatever I'm doing?
Yeah. So would you say that, you know, it's a couple of steps in the process where you're actually, you know, either creating reliable information or consuming reliable information, but then also implementing it in, say, the start of your journey or the continuation of your journey?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. You know, we touched upon goals and, you know, how that kind of affects, you know, as you said, that we have to create smart goals. People need to work towards, you know, specifying, you know, what the goals should be. How does one go about creating like short-term goals versus long-term goals in this journey?
Right. So when we talk about long-term goals, they could be time-bound. They could be goals that, you know, what do I want to achieve in next 1 year or probably 2 years? It could, again, mean different things to different people because, see, fitness comes in different sizes. It could be, you know, a 16-year-old guy wanting to get selected in a basketball team. It could be a 60-year-old man, you know, wanting to be better at probably doing 5 kilometer run or 10 kilometer run. So again, long-term goals should be the actual goals and they should be broken down into.
Yeah.
Giving an example, I train a lot of people who are above 60 And some of them, they you know, they have a goal of playing longer tennis. Like they want to play tennis for longer duration. They want to run 10 kilometers or they want to probably participate in a half marathon. So that's their long-term goal. So how we break it down into shorter goals is that I give them goals which are of duration of 2 months. And then we start working on it. We start building up capacity. We start building up work endurance. And that's how we work. So that's how it should be approached. I mean, goal, long-term goal is the ultimate goal that you want to achieve. That's the goal in mind. But the goal in sight is the one which is, again, 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. What are you achieving then? And that's where doing reassessment and reevaluation of those SMART goals comes into play. So every 2 months you're doing SMART goals again. Okay, you've achieved this. Let's do this again. So that's what, you know, long-term goals and short-term goals, they sort of come into play in training.
So essentially you're saying that, you know, that long-term goal needs to be broken down into achievable short-term goals. So for example, if somebody's aiming to hit like a pretty, you know, low body fat percentage that they're going for, or somebody's trying to lose a significant amount of weight, you know, they have to, you know, how would say, it also depends, like if somebody's trying to lose, say, 30 kilos, right? That's not something that's possible, say, in 6 months without like... is that possible in 6 months?
Well, that's healthy weights, not possible in 6 months.
Exactly.
But for example, if somebody was wanting to lose 30 kilos, I would give them a long-term goal of say about 30 to 35 weeks or probably 40 weeks at max.
Yeah.
Also depending on how physically active they are.
Yeah.
And then breaking that goal down into probably say 4 kgs in a month.
Okay.
So once we break those goals down like 4 kgs a month or 5 kgs a month, and once an individual achieves that, there's also a sense of achievement that they have.
Yeah.
So that means that they'll be motivated. But if you keep looking at that mark of 30 and you leave, you know, you've lost 4 kgs, you still have 26 to go. That looks like a long journey.
Yeah.
And it plays a major role in people's psyche when it comes to sticking to a regime, sticking to a training plan. So once I say, yaar, abhi toh 4 kilo hua hai, let's just you know, try something else.
Yeah.
Let's just go towards something which is going to give me quicker results. So that also, you know, plays a major role in terms of how you condition your brain to accept the facts and accept the low goal strategy that you're following.
So would you say like a good strategy for this would be to have like this long-term goal just written away somewhere, you decide that and completely forget about it and remember those say 4 week short-term goals you had. Once you hammer those out, then it's like, okay, what's the next goal that I'm making?
No, absolutely. Writing goals down, writing dates down does make a lot of difference. Once you write it down, once you're looking at it probably once a week or, you know, once every day, it really keeps you motivated. And for people who want to achieve certain things, especially for people who are losing weight and who want to gain muscle, or, you know, who are really wanting to do some aesthetic changes in the body, for them, it's really hard to, or it's easy for them to get demotivated very quickly.
Because those immediate results don't particularly show.
So writing it down can sort of give them more patience, train their brains to that, you know, okay, you've got a long way to go. Let's probably... looking at that, probably sticking it on the wall where you're working, your workstation, and then having a look at it and probably sipping 8 glasses of water, saying that you're getting closer to that goal. So that's how it can sort of really help them motivate themselves.
Awesome, awesome. So, I mean, besides motivation, you know, besides writing down these short-term goals to, you know, have the best progressive way to get to your goal, I think what would be helpful for, you know, some of the people that are listening here would be, whether they're starting off or whether, you know, what we had discussed in terms of somebody that's in the middle of their journey and they need to pivot to kind of bring about a change in their journey. What is the best way to actually get help from, you know, what is available in the market, right? There's a lot of gyms, there's a lot of studios, there's a lot of trainers, nutritionists, all sorts that, you know, there could be good ones, there could be bad ones.
Right.
I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts on that.
Yeah.
But how do we, you know, how does one go about finding the best help?
Well... Here's the thing, though. I can go on answering this question for a long time, but because we've got little time, I'm going to keep it very sweet and I'm going to share the stats with you. Back in 2015, there was a survey done in Tier 1, Tier 2 cities where the results were that every 1% out of 7 was suffering from diabetes in Tier 1 and Tier 2 cities. And over the past 12 years, I am definitely sure that if not triple, the amount of gyms and studios and trainers and fitness professionals have doubled. And so that means that the demand of being fit has sort of been met.
Yeah.
But another survey was done in 2015 2 years ago, and they figured out that every one person out of three suffers from diabetes. So here's the thing. The fitness as an industry has grown so much.
The ecosystem has grown.
It's grown.
Yeah.
But the outcome hasn't been there. Yeah. So the result hasn't been there. So the thing is, what's missing is probably education and knowledge and probably lack of research.
Yeah.
I see a lot of professionals use a lot of thick books as guidelines for, you know, to give trainings to people. And some of them are on Western standards, right? They're not probably well enough researched on Indian people. And that's where the sort of differences come into play. Now, coming to your question, choosing the facility, you know, going or choosing a professional or choosing help, it has to be convenient, right? It has to be convenient in terms that you don't have to travel too long. You don't have to spend too much time getting there. So again, saving time, like I was looking at the gym that I was telling you about my journey.
Close by.
I looked at a place which was between my workplace and my house. So I could go there, I can work out, I could get ready and then get back to my hospital. So something of that sort. So convenience is definitely one of them, because if it's not convenient, you will lose interest and you will stop going to that place altogether. Secondly comes knowledge. So, I mean, to be able to know that the person that you're taking help with has enough knowledge, the best way is to just make sure that, you know, or check if they're educated enough. Do they hold the right kind of, you know, certifications, or are they authentic enough, the certificates? So to have that understanding. So again, it comes, a person who going to a professional holds the responsibility of checking if he's going to the right sources, he's getting enough information, and also doing a little cross check after they get back home, probably, you know, sort of Google certain things that, you know, a trainer or a professional said, and then, you know, sort of knowing what exactly it is that could really sort of give them information and also help them choose the right thing.
So with regards to that, I wanted to just kind of deep dive into the professional bit a little bit. Mm-hmm. Would you say there are a couple of specific questions? I know you mentioned the, you know, the certification bit, you know, doing the research in terms of their knowledge. Do you think there are specific questions that would give, you know, a beginner or somebody who may not know how to pick help, you know, is this the right person for the job?
A few questions that I can think of that one person, you know, should ask to a fitness professional. A could be, do they have a certification or a course which is from background of fitness or wellness?
Okay.
Right? Nowadays, there are a lot of people who are trying to make a switch and wanting to come into fitness. They have their backgrounds of engineering. They're probably in commerce, or they've done something else. Or probably they've just worked out for 6 months. They really liked it. So they want to just become
a career out of it.
Yeah. So make a career out of it. So one thing would be to know the background. If their background is from health and fitness and wellness, that's great. Secondly is also if you can know their testimonies, right? So if you know somebody who's taken help.
Try to get references.
Try to get references. So references do make, you know, sort of gives authenticity to the work that they're doing. They might not have like 10 certifications, but they might have experience.
Yeah.
And having experience with people, I think, is the best way of sort of, you know, starting off as a career in fitness altogether.
So maybe being able to like actually get in touch with a roster of previous clients and actually being able to chat with them, that might be a way to get around it.
So what were the challenges or what do they achieve? So it's a great way of making a friend and sort of knowing them and also knowing the potential of how it can work.
Cool. And, you know, moving beyond the trainer, beyond the fitness professional one, you know, you have a business in the nutrition space where you actually create customized plans based on goals. You know, what are some important things that, you know, you have kept part of your value proposition and as a professional that you think that people that are, you know, getting into the wellness / fitness journey should keep in mind while if, you know, like you said, people have difficult time getting the right nutrition, right? So if I am potentially an individual who doesn't have the time to actually cook meals and, you know, do meal preps properly for the day ahead, for the week ahead, how do I select, say, a service? Or what is, you know, how do I know that the service is actually going to provide a goal-based meal plan for me?
I think it all comes down to the point where it has to be researched enough. So like how I do it at my kitchen, which is Chefingo, is that I I give them a plan before they could even sort of taste our meals. Just sort of give them a plan. And also not just giving them a solution, but I'm giving them, I'm also educating them. I'm also educating them about themselves, how to choose their macros, how to, you know, I also give them recipes sometimes. Because, for example, if they can manage their own breakfast and the time of deliveries don't match, so you manage your own food, you manage your own breakfast. So I give them recipes. I also teach them how to measure their food. Because that's where, you know, it also is very important. For example, if I ask somebody to have 100 grams of cooked, you know, brown rice.
Yeah.
If they don't know what 100 gram is, they might just end up having 200 or 150. I mean, those are extra calories going in. So that does not solve the purpose. So to know the macros, to be able to measure the food, and also giving them education that how did I figure out how many calories you're supposed to eat?
Yeah.
And how did I figure out of those calories, how much should be protein, how much should be carb, how much should be fat? So to give them that education, I'm just not doing a short-term sale with them, but I'm also making a relationship with them so that they know that I'm authentic and they can come back to me if in case they have any query later on.
So just to, you know, actually that point that you made about macros and knowing them, I just want to kind of, you know, deep dive into that for a few minutes for the listeners that don't know about, you know, macros. There's a phenomenon called if it fits your macros, right?
Right.
Which helps you kind of decide how much you should be eating of a particular macronutrient. Can you tell us a little bit about that and, you know, how you've implemented it at Chefingo as well?
So there are different schools of thought, and the one that I use to sort of design a plan for my clients is that I, and there's a stat that I use. So the formula that I use to take out BMR, which is basic metabolic rate, is I multiply 24 to the body weight in kgs, multiplied by 1.2 for men, and for women it's 0.9. So if you calculate that and if you come to that, the number, that's your basic metabolic rate. So that's the amount of calories you are burning on daily basis. So for example, if you have a day off and you're not even going out to pick up your newspaper, that's the amount of calories your body actually needs to survive.
Survive, yeah.
So then on top of that, we add the calories that you burned, how active you are. So are you very active? Are you sedentary? Does your job require you to travel a lot or sit a lot or walk a lot? Or does it require you to just stay on your ass and just sort of be there for the whole day? So that also comes into consideration. Then we add on those calories as well. And then we add on how much calories are you burning when you're exercising or training? What kind of training are you doing? How many are you taking your heart rate to? What zone are you taking your heart rate? So that all comes into consideration when we come to that figure. And then it comes to the point where we ask a person, what is your goal? And 80% of cases, people want to lose weight. They want to shed some weight. They want to, you know, have abs and stuff. So once, if somebody wants to lose weight, this is how we do it. So once we come out with the total expenditure of calories, and then we create a deficit of 500 calories on every day basis. So 500 calories every day, 7 days a week, is 3,500 calories, which is equivalent to 1 pound of weight loss.
Okay.
So that's how we plan the nutrition. And then there's some, you know, different cases also, like people who've got some ailment like hypertension or they're diabetic, then we have to sort of change things
tweak
around
it a little bit
also
for that,
we can't really keep it high on calories, so we have to stay low. And what type of you know, caloric food are we using for them, you know? So that also comes into play. And then, like you spoke about macros, for macros like carbs, protein and fats, now depending on a goal, the ratio of these change. So it could be like, for example, if somebody wants to gain muscle, right, I would say high amount of carbs, a decent amount of protein, and probably a little lesser amount of fat. Or if somebody wants to lose weight, I would say about moderate amount of carbs, moderate amount of protein, and slightly higher fat than the person who's wanting to gain weight. So that's like very, very customized. So we do it different for everybody depending on what they want to achieve, what they're doing right now. And I also help them in terms of if they want to also help them in terms of knowing what they're doing in terms of their exercising and training plan. And also if we could tweak that a little bit, and also what kind of supplements are they taking? Are they taking any? Are they not taking any? Also keeping those into consideration. So it's like a full grown process that we follow with every client. It's not just like one automated or formulated thing that we have.
Yeah.
It's like every client that comes to us, it's like a journey from scratch.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we start off. So we look at every aspect that we can and try to, you know, give him the results in his controlled environment.
Yeah. So there's a lot of also understanding the, you know, the other factors in their life, like you had mentioned, right? And it's not a one size fits all. It's literally right. customized for every single one of your customers, right?
Right.
Just to, you know, touch a little bit upon Chefingo, you know, how did you decide you wanted to get into the nutrition side of, you know, people's fitness journeys? You know, how did you decide that this was something that would be something that you wanted to invest your time and money into besides, you know, actually training people to be fit on the fitness side?
Right. So, again, it was a very impulsive decision from my end to open the restaurant. And I always used to struggle a lot with, and this was one thing that I used to think about, like all of my clients, they do their workout with 100% intensity. They're always up with their game. Some of them, they achieve results. Some of them, they don't. And one thing that I always wanted to know about my clients was A, how well were they recovering? B, what were they eating? And when I got an opportunity, which was again with, I was training one of my clients and he had opened a very good biryani joint in Gurgaon, and biryani is really popular in Gurgaon. And my pitch to him was that I also want to open a kitchen. Can I use your facility, as I, you know, sort of make food for my clients and myself, again, myself also, because I am all on the road all the time. So I drive around Delhi and Gurgaon for about like 4 hours every day. So for me to take care of my nutrition and keep my nutrition at point, it was very tough for me to do the meal prep early in the morning and stuff. So I wanted some kind of solution. So I was looking for a solution where I could get food made for me and don't have to worry about it. And I can have it at the time that I want to have it. And it should be good, nutritious food for me. So that was always in my mind. And so when I got an opportunity of opening something, but not with my client, but so a shop right next to his. So I had a look at that space. I really liked that space. And again, that was a very impulsive decision. At the same time, I took that space in and then we started off working on a brand. So it was only after I took the space where I, you know, sort of designed the business plan and how things are going to work. How, if one approaches, how do we customize plans? So for 2 months, we did not open. We were just working on the, you know, the physical establishment. And also the digital platforms on how we're going to be selling it, how we will market it. So it was a great journey for me as, you know, coming from just personal training business to food business, which are completely different realms altogether.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was challenging, but yeah, so that's how it came into. So it was pure necessity for myself and for my clients. But now that we're here, might as well help some more people.
Excellent. And you're actually, you know, preparing these meals for people and delivering it to their doorstep every
right.
day, ready
right.
for them to consume, right?
Right.
Excellent. So it seems like now, you know, after all of this, you've got the most holistic actual value proposition, right? You've done the physical therapy, you know, injury related angle of it. You've done all the different, you know, functional training methods. You've got, you know, you've made yourself an expert at that. You've been helping people on that side.
Yep.
And also you've got the nutrition angle, which is all, some would say, more important than say the exercise angle, right?
Right.
So jumping, you know, just to, you know, kind of get into my last couple of questions that I wanted to chat about, you know, what are your thoughts in terms of, you know, how the functional training industry is going, right? You've, you know, you've gotten into training people with TRXs and there's various other pieces of equipment that TRX has also kind of launched.
Yeah.
And suspension training, nobody can say is a new phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
It's become more popular in the recent years.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, how suspension training has entered the Indian market specifically, and you know, how does that really help people in terms of convenience, in terms of actual execution of their workout?
So yeah, it's great. I mean, how TRX has sort of entered Indian market is amazing, because every gym that you go to has a pair of yellow and black straps hanging down there, and I see a lot of people using it. I see them on social media, on Facebook, on Instagram. They're putting up their photographs and videos of working out on TRX. And TRX globally also has become a leader in functional training. And they realized that the reason why they launched these many products, that, you know, they've launched a medicine ball, they've launched, you know, battling ropes and kettlebells and all the function modalities, is because they realized that if they want to become leaders in functional training, they have to become leaders in movement training.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter, you know, what modality you're holding in your hand. A squat is a squat, right?
Yeah.
A squat can be done
with a dumbbell,
you know, with a dumbbell, with a kettlebell, or with a medicine ball or anything. So TRX understood that. And from TRX, more from a functional training company, they've become into like a movement specialist.
Yeah.
So we provide solutions when it comes to giving movements to people. And again, for me, how, you know, I really love the fact that, you know, I've spent so much time training people on TRX and how it's sort of affected people is, and this happens, this is very normal. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this. Now, if I were to break down somebody's day, right, from 24 hours, if I were to break down their day, how long do you think a normal person would sleep for?
Let's say average 5 to 7 hours.
5 to 7 hours. Yeah. So let's keep it 7 hours.
Yeah.
How much time do you think they would spend working on? So maximum people that I've met and they train, they're mostly sedentary and they sit, right? So that would be about 6 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 6 and 7 is 13. How much time do you think they would spend eating breakfast, lunch or dinner or coffee or having drinks out with friends
two
after
and a
their
half,
work?
3 hours, maybe 3 hours.
About two and a half, 3 hours. So that's makes it
16 hours.
And then it comes to how much time do you think they would commute sitting in a car and commuting?
Well, it depends if you're in Delhi or which city you're in. But yeah, let's just take maybe 2 hours, 1 hour.
Two hours on an average, right? So 2 hours, that makes about 18 hours.
Yeah.
And then how much time do you think they would spend when they go back home? They want to sit with their family or watch Netflix or watch two, you know, episodes of Narcos or Game of Thrones. How much time do you think they would spend?
Another probably 2 hours, I'd say.
2 hours. So that makes it 20 hours. So they're left with 4 hours. Out of that 4 hours, they want to come to the gym, park their car, come, you know, change, work out, again, take a shower, go back. So that sort of includes it all. If they want to pick up some groceries and stuff.
The entire journey, essentially.
So what happens is out of those 24 hours, 20 hours, they were mostly sitting or sleeping. So that means your spine was pretty much unloaded. So there was not too much force going down your spine. And there's a very cool term by one of the doctors that I follow a lot. His name is Truett McGill. And he came out with this term called gluteal amnesia. Now, gluteal amnesia means that, and he did a research to figure out the, you know, the consequences of sitting for too long. So, and figure out if you sit for more than 20 minutes, your glutes are disconnected from your brain. So, your glutes end up not listening to you. So, they're not working at your will. And then when that happens, then that could lead us into probably our hamstrings working more for us to do movements, our lower backs becoming weaker. So, people who sit for too long, they have tight hamstrings and they have weaker back, so it could result to a lot of other things. So, and when you go to a gym and when you meet a sales representative, what's the first thing they say? Hello, sir, my name is Arun, please take a seat.
Yeah.
Right? And then you get onto the floor.
Yeah.
And the trainer comes, you, okay, my name is Arun, I'm going to be taking you through a workout. Sit on this machine and then do chest press.
Yeah.
Sit
yeah.
on this machine and do, I mean, the guy, that guy has been already
sitting doing more of what you're doing all day.
Sitting for 20 hours. So that's where, you know, function training came into play. So I'm going to make somebody good when I train them on what they're doing in their life in those 20 hours.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to make you better at sitting. So irrespective of the fact if you're sitting for 20 minutes at a stretch or 20 hours at a stretch, I'm going to make you better so that your glutes don't sleep and you don't become.
Yeah.
And you,
so
don't
have lower back issues.
Right. You don't have issues. So
yeah.
And you don't go and pay the doctor or physio. I want to take that money. So that thing came into, you know, practice when I started working up with TRX, because most of the workouts that you do on TRX, you're using your core all the time. You're standing up and training most of the time.
Yeah.
So even if you're doing back exercises or chest exercises, you're mostly standing and doing it. So, and I, this is also one of my sales pitch when I used to, you know, you meet people and I tell them, you know, what function training is, how are they're going to be training it, because TRX still is pretty alien to a lot of people. And they don't understand how the bands are going to work. Will they be able to do all workout? Do they need a gym or do they not need a gym? So this is one of the pitches that I use to explain them.
Yeah.
That 1 hour that you spend with me on, say, a suspension trainer or another other modality, I'm going to make you stand up and train.
Yeah.
And use your core. So 1 hour is going to be equivalent to making you better in the other 23 hours of your life.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how sort of movement training and function training and all these things sort of tie up well, so together that it really helps, you know, sort of me and other, you know, trainers who use suspension trainers for their clients.
Awesome. Yeah. And I remember reading somewhere that, you know, functional training, the basic idea of it is to actually make you better and stronger at things that you do throughout the day, which exactly. is exactly the point you right. made. Right. This, you know, kind of brings me to my last and I feel like one of the most important questions when it comes to the journey of fitness and wellness. You know, a lot of people get demotivated or, you know, quit or take a long break when they face any kind of injury, or, you know, most people that have either grown up playing any kind of sports, whether right. it's tennis, basketball, cricket, they've all faced, there's no way that they've been 100% healthy throughout yep. their career, right?
Yep.
How does, you know, and you come from a, you know, a physiotherapy background, that was your kickoff in this entire space. You know, how does one kind of, you know, bring that into the journey? How do you decide when it's safe to train? How does, you know, one get over an injury to get back on track in their journey? And, you know, what are some important points that people should know to either not make it worse or to make sure that they're not resting for more time than they actually need to?
I mean, the best thing that that anybody can do when they're injured is to sort of see the right kind of professional help. And this is what holistic approach is, right? You're just not focusing on just going to a gym or a studio, right? You need help from other professionals as well, right? You need help from a nutritionist. You need help from, for example, an orthopedician or a physical therapist or a sports, you know, rehab specialist. So you need help from all these places if you want to sort of be, you know, at a place which is more balanced and you've got that equilibrium set. So if somebody is injured, best advice would be to go seek professional help, get fixed, and then start your journey again.
Yeah.
And also to avoid injuries, right? To avoid injuries which happen on a gym floor or while you're training or while you're working out, you need to make sure that the programs, the training plans that you're following, they're pretty much balanced.
Yeah.
They're not just, you know, just one thing that you've been doing for a sustainable amount of time and you're not adding flexibility or you're not adding mobility, you're not adding stabilization. Once in a while, it's okay to step back, you know, to take a step back and look at very small muscles in your body, right? So start working on core, probably start working on some stabilizers, which, you know, on sometimes on machines and body, you know, weights you can't really do. So that's one way of preventing injuries, to know yourself. Also, again, professional help comes into play then, that they can do a vulnerability test with you. So they can test you and they can tell you, okay, this part is weak, you might get injured here. So that's more preventive measure that they can follow. So, right, so if you have professional help and if you've got access to something of that sort, it's great. If you don't, well, it's always best to sort of rest.
Yeah, and listen to your body, right?
Rest it out, listen to your body. Take time, you know, it'll heal properly. And then, and this again is like how you move is product of what you've done in past. Like for some people who have been more active in their teenage years or who've been more active in their schools and colleges, are fairly more active in life. They have been injured and they know how to cope with it. So they know, you know, certain basics of how to cope with an injury. But people who have not been really active in their life, who've you know, spend most of the time reading books.
Yeah.
So they are the ones who actually, they know a lot of stuff, but then when it comes to practicality, they sort of lag behind a little bit. So best way is to sort of take professional help and do not just randomly Google stuff or take information out of internet, because if you search for anything on internet, it'll lead you to cancer. It'll lead to a result with cancer.
You can kind of get lost on WebMD for hours.
So best way is to go to a professional, seek help. You know, if you're training with a trainer, if you've got trainers around you in the gym, ask them if they know of any good professional. Because being in fitness industry, we end up getting...
You have a network around you.
We have a network. We know a lot of professionals. So it would be best to know them so that that professional whom you're seeking help from can also advise the trainer on what should be done and what should not be done. So things to avoid and things to sort of be careful while training on the floor or, you know, wherever you are.
Awesome. I think that was super insightful, man. Thanks. Any, you know, last messages for, you know, people, last bits of information for people that are just starting out or, you know, people that are looking for a change in their journey?
Best thing I can advise for somebody who's just starting out is to to start off with something that they can sustainably do it for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
So just sort of downloading a plan from bodybuilding.com, which looks super intense and which can make you like Hrithik Roshan of Krish in 6 weeks. I mean, try not to fall into that trap.
Yeah.
And just do something which is sustainable, something that can help you survive the day-to-day activities that you're doing, and then build onto that, onto that work capacity. And this is what I tell, you know, every course or every workshop that I go to, and this is one concept that I give everybody, is that our brains are designed to survive. The survival mode of our brains are always switched on. So when an individual is working out at a gym, and you're sweating and you're short of breath and you are wanting to breathe, so that's when the brain survival instinct is going to tell you, you know what, Kabir, you are falling into this short of breath mode very often nowadays. How about I change something in your body so that you can keep up to this standard or to adapt?
Yeah.
That's exactly adaptation. So once you start slow, once you keep hitting that point where your brain is actively working to help you survive, is when you actually see changes in your body. And that's it's a beautiful way of slowly and steadily stepping up the ladder and not playing snakes and ladder, because snakes and ladder have ladders, but it also has snakes.
Yeah, they bring you back down.
So just sort of taking one step at a time, and then just sort of, you know, embracing the fact that, you know, it's not like a short-term thing, but it's to make you live longer and healthier and make you faster, stronger and durable.
Well, thank you, Arun, for taking the time to chat with us and sharing all this great knowledge. You know, if people want to kind of get in touch with you, learn more about Chefingo, learn more about MoveFit, and, you know, how even if they want to get in touch with you personally to get some more of your knowledge, how should they be doing that?
So I'll share my social media handles. They can find me on Facebook at Arun Chahal, ArunChahal. They can find me on Instagram, arun.movefit, MoveFit. And they can find Chefingo at chefingo.com or Chefingo, which is the Instagram and the Facebook page.
Awesome, awesome. Thanks so much. And all of this information will be available in the show notes, including the formula that he told us to figure out your BMR and how you calculate your macros. Thanks again, Arun. We really appreciate
your
time.
Thank you so much. It was great coming here, man.
All right, guys, that was this episode for The Pursuit of Wellness. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We love to hear what you think, so feel free to give us a review or jump onto our Facebook group and share your thoughts. This has been a Mancha Media production. Catch you next time.